still morning. Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram for the Earl Ingram Show. And you can call in. Sam has the call-in information.
Give us a call or text. Excuse me. Give us a call or text here at 101 FM The Shaw or WAUK 540 AM. And it is 844-967-2789 to join that conversation.
So, Sam, before the break, I think we were talking about student loans, and I was sort of crying out about how it is that our politicians could ignore the problems of families and otherwise focus all their attention, for instance, on spending money on the military. But I think that that newsflash there showed us just how distracted our political processes can be, because I think a good 2 minutes of that news forecast was about the Gableman investigation, about a supposedly fraudulent campaign and election process that occurred now just a year and a half ago. That elected the sitting president, and which has so far, I think, turned up absolutely nothing. So,
Keep throwing some tax dollars at it. It's fine. Let's just keep funding it anyway. It's fine.
No, it's fun. Let's fund it, and let's spend our time, our airtime, and our valuable legislative time talking about it, because then we aren't going to talk about things like, how do we set up a system in our society, a governmental process, which supports the people in this country rather than the way it's currently jiggered? And I would suggest that a lot of this has to do with the problem Tom from Los Angeles always identifies, which is money in politics. It seems that in order to get elected in this country, you need to have line up the proper interest groups. And you also have to line up sufficient money. And both of those don't tend to relate directly to the problems in this country. The most active interest groups, well, let's identify what's probably the most effective lobby in the country. Isn't it gun rights? I think the NRA is identified as one of the strongest lobby groups in this country. And then another interest group, which I don't diminish the extent of the emotional relationship of this interest to the people's interest, but the abortion issue has drawn more political attention and is probably one of the strongest litmus. So in this country, if you want to run for office from the right, there's two positions that you need to embrace absolutely. One of them is right to life, and the other one is gun rights. What do those two policies have to do? I mean, I realize the right to life people would say that they're worried about future generations, the ones that don't even exist yet. But what do they have to do with the rights of even that generation once they come into existence? And to me, it seems to me that our political process has been focused so much, for instance, on this abortion issue. It's focused on generations that haven't been conceived yet and ignores the interests of all of those generations that have been conceived, the most important one being the children that are recently born, those recently born children whose parents don't have maternity leave, who don't have child daycare set up for them, who don't have preschool education available to them, who won't have health care available to them unless they either are sufficiently poor so that they qualify for Medicaid, or if their parents are sufficiently affluent and well entrenched into the middle class so that they can afford health care insurance, they're going to find themselves without all of those things. These children who are going to be born into a country that ranks 38th in the world in child poverty and ranks well up and not at the top, and not best, but rather well down the line on infant mortality. Why are we not so very worried about children once they come into existence, but we're going to spend all of our political attention on the children not yet born?
Thank you for saying that, Sandy, because as a young woman, I cannot imagine, as the text earlier said, those prices of giving birth alone, I could not afford, even if I wanted a child, I could not afford giving birth. I could not afford supplying any good life for that child. I can barely do that for myself right now. And you're telling me that if I get pregnant, I'll just add the child to foster care? And look how successful that system's going for us and how many problems that is causing for the youth growing up in America. Like, I don't understand what the plan is.
And let's just compare that to what would happen to you if you were living in France or Germany or one of the developed countries in Europe. In that circumstance, you could choose reasonably between a woman who becomes pregnant, maybe in a manner that's unplanned. She could rationally choose between having the child, because the government is going to, she is going to have provided for her, and her child is going to have provided for it. Let's look at the child's interest, the health care required for a safe birth. They're going to experience a lower infant mortality rate than is experienced in the United States. That child will be born into a better child poverty circumstance than would be the average case in the United States. That child will be born into a family that has maternity leave so that the parents can be available to the child during the most immediate formative months of their life. That child will have child daycare available to them because it will be provided to them. And that child will be educated in a manner that is fair and equal to the education available to everyone else. So the decision made by that parent is far less difficult, far less of a rock in a hard spot than the decision you just described that you would have to make if this same circumstance happened to you. Why have we gotten there politically in this country? Can you figure that out, Sam?
I would love to know, because I, as a 23-year-old woman, never thought that I would be put in this position that I am potentially going to be put in this next couple months. Genuinely, I am horrified. I am appalled. I am a toaster oven, apparently. All I am is a toaster oven that produces new beings. So, you know, what do I have to say about my body? It's fine. But on the other hand, we can have people on the more conservative side of the spectrum say, oh, my body, my choice for masks or vaccines. But when I say it about something that my body will literally be changed forever for, it's not okay.
Well, you know, and the thing of it is that the focus seems to be on the fetus and on the viability of the fetus and the infant. The focus seems to be eliminated immediately after exit from the womb and the child is birthed. And then what happens to the welfare of that child? And why are we not so focused on that particular circumstance politically? You'd think that religious values, personal values, family values would focus all of our political attention on what happens to this child when it emerges from the womb and enters our world where we actually have control of it. Instead of that, all of this political interest and focus, and now the Supreme Court's focus, seems to be focused on the fetus when the only sustenance that is provided to that fetus is from the mother being required to carry it through to birth. And then what happens after birth? What happens to the mother? What happens to the mother's obligations to the child? And what happens to that child? And we seem to turn our back on that. And particularly the conservatives, who seem to carry closest to their heart and minds and the notion of the right of the fetus to be born, seem to ignore the interest of that child post-birth. And to me, I have such a great deal of trouble understanding that point. I can understand the heat and fire and emotion over the issue of abortion. I don't agree with those who oppose the choice, but I understand it. But I don't understand turning our back on families and children post-birth and what we are doing to each of our next generations when the obligation I thought that our parents handed us was to be better stewards of the and to provide to our offspring a better opportunity than we realized, to give the world to them better off than we received it. And what's happening now is exactly the inverse in the United States. Generation after generation now, ever since, the baby boomers were, I think, the last generation to have things better than their parents. And the boomers have managed to hand to their children and to their grandchildren a world that is less capable of providing for them the opportunities which we had. And to me, this is a sin. This is a terrible political sin. And I cry out to the political processes to start to focus on things this basic. Why don't we get down to basics in our conversation about things instead of talking about things in sound bites, which have an inability to relate back to Tom, Dick, and Mary? Because, you know, so many families in this country are living paycheck to paycheck. And why don't we just deal with the people who live, many people live paycheck to paycheck who have incomes like I just described. There's very little sympathy being extended to families with $100,000 a year of income. But you know what? In the environment, in the economy that we've created, those families are living a fearful existence paycheck to paycheck. And if our political process, and particularly if the Democratic Party doesn't figure out how to reach out to those people, we are going to find a problem with who we can elect to office and who we do elect to office. And I would assert that part of our issue with respect to how state houses are controlled and what portions of our geography are red and what portions are blue can be laid at the feet of the inability of the political process to focus on what I'm describing right now, which are fundamental family issues, and family issues which are shared by many people with incomes that far exceed the poverty level within cities. And if we do that, we can stop worrying about gerrymandered maps, because blue will extend into the rural communities and we'll find ourselves with a far different political dynamic. I think we're headed to another break. We'll be back shortly.